Hey, this is David Perdue from MyNAMS.com and Novice to Advanced Marketing System, and this is the Insiders Club. We, once a month, as you guys know, do a in-depth webinar on, it's actually in-depth training. It's an all-day deal, kind of. We do usually at least 4 hours, sometimes 4 to 5 hours, depending on the topic and how many questions we get. And truthfully, by the end of the 4 hours, you guys are fairly exhausted. So we break it up in the middle of the day with a two-hour break. We have often have guests with us in the morning to give us their expertise on the topic that we're talking about. And today's is a really good one. Today we are going to be talking about joint venture partnerships, joint venture relationships, and how you leverage those things to really grow your business fast. And Stuart Valentine, Sterling, that was my one for the day, right, Sterling?
Everybody gets one. That's okay.
That's right. Everybody gets one. Sterling Valentine is with us, and Sterling is a really well-known joint venture specialist since about 2006. I'll let him tell you what his claim to fame was and how he got started in joint venture marketing. It's really an interesting story. And we are doing some work together now, and I'm really enjoying this relationship, and I think that we're going to learn a lot today about how Sterling does joint venture marketing and how he builds those relationships. And I'll chime in too, because I'm not so bad at it myself, and it's kind of as a result of building all of the relationships I have at the NAMS workshop. But I'll save most of my comments for later this afternoon about these kind of things. So Sterling, I'm delighted that you're here. Thank you so much for coming.
It's a great honor and a pleasure. I mean, come on, NAMS. I would jump out of bed anytime to talk to the NAMS crew.
Well, I do appreciate that. We are very delighted to have you, and I've been wanting to meet you for a long time. You and I had started talking maybe a month, 2 months ago. And we've done a couple of things together already, and I really enjoy what we do together because it's all about value. So when we talk about joint venture relationships, one of the things I wanted you to talk about particularly is about the mindset of a joint venture, because there are the technical aspects of doing joint venture marketing, but mindset is really important. So first off, tell folks about yourself, how you got into this business, and what your first relationships were, and then I want you to go into the mindset a little bit. Then we'll spend the second hour we have with you on the technical aspects.
Right. Okay. Well, first of all, thanks for being here. And if you're listening to this, David Perdue is definitely a person that you should have at the top of your Rolodex, because what he's doing with NAMS is phenomenal. It's current. It's right in step with what's happening right now. And you need community, and you need connection, and you need authority. You can't do this alone. And that's going to be a big theme that comes up over and over again. So first things first, you're in the right place if you're listening to David. I would definitely, you know, whitelist his emails, because you've got to know who to trust and you've got to know who to follow in this business, and he's definitely one to do that with. So that being said, I'm going to give everybody a little bit of a disclaimer right away. I'm going to be honest with you. When for the first 3 years when I was struggling online, if you said joint ventures, my eyes kind of glazed over. I'm just going to be straight up front. If I had heard this webinar during the time that I was struggling, you know, buying and trying and juggling and struggling, trying to make some money on the internet, I just tuned it out. What can I tell you? It didn't sound like quick money to me. You know, it didn't sound like a big score. It sounded like some kind of esoteric nonsense that you talk about with other people. I don't know how to do that kind of stuff. Anyway, skip that. Let me go to the next thing, right?
It is a little bit, it's like a mystery, right? How can these possibly work that fast?
Well, it doesn't sound technical. It doesn't sound doable. It just sounds kind of like a bunch of people getting together and, you know, smoking the peace pipe and having an international summit, joint venture. I don't understand what that means. It didn't sound like something I could just push a button and make money with, you know?
Right.
On pay-per-click. Now that, you know, now I can understand, I can grasp that. Or how to make a website, how to build a blog. These are, you know, tactical things that I can just wrap my mind around. But I just have to say up front, I probably wouldn't have listened to this the time that I most needed it. And if it wasn't for an accident of fate, if you will, just sort of a twist of meeting somebody right place, right time kind of thing, who knows if I'd ever would have been even on this call. So I just have to say, it's not because I was smart enough to figure this out. Hopefully by telling you that, ladies and gentlemen, you'll understand.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really great place for you to actually tell when you flip a switch in your head once you figure it out, right?
Mm-hmm. And I just, if you listen to this as if this is for you and this is about you and this is really something easy for you to do and this should be the basis, the operating system, if you will, of everything that you do and think about online, then I promise you, you're going to be able to get the same kind of results that I did. Now, for example, for 3 years I juggled and struggled. After I found a mentor, we began a joint venture partnership. I started other joint ventures. 90 days later, we had put over $100,000 through our bank account in a 7-day period. In that 90 days, we did a 7-day launch and it was over 100 grand. So just to give you some idea of what's possible, you could be doing anything with your time and you decided to listen to this. I want to make sure you understand it's in your best interest to follow this and not listen to it like something somebody else does, but listen to this like something that you do. And you can easily do, like David said perfectly, just flip a switch. So there's my disclaimer, David. Where would you like us to go from here?
Yeah, so let's talk about this. Now, people who think about joint ventures often think that we're talking about the IM space, and we're not. Joint ventures have been around forever, right? I mean, when you go to the dry cleaners and they have business cards and flyers from the cafe down the street, they've got a joint venture arrangement going on. And even if it's not for pay, it is an exchange for traffic, right?
Absolutely, and let's be clear, there are probably some legal definitions of joint ventures, and since I'm not a lawyer, I'm not addressing those. I'm talking about the standard, business out on the street word that we use of joint ventures to mean the following. So if you have a pen, I would write this down because this has made me a ton of money and I want you to have the same effect. A joint venture, in my opinion, is a mutually beneficial relationship wherein each party does what's in their best interest, but that serves both partners. So it's really got three parts. A mutually beneficial relationship, that means it's good for David and it's good for me. But the key here is that we're doing the thing that we would be doing anyway. That's the hinge, that's the key part. And by doing so, we set up this mutually beneficial relationship so that it benefits the other partner. So usually when you're on your own, you scratch your own itch and your own itch gets scratched and that's kind of the end of the story. But in a mutually beneficial relationship, when David scratches his own itch, which he would do anyway, it scratches my itch as well. That's the thing that I think most people don't understand. They think it's some kind of, hey, would you hook me up? Hey, would you do me a favor? Hey, would you extend me a courtesy? And that's not what a joint venture is. That's a favor. That's a hookup. It's a different thing. If somebody else is having to bend over backwards for you or do something to go out of their standard operating procedure or their comfort zone, it's not a joint venture because the great Alex Mendozian told me that 1 + 1 = 11 when you do a joint venture, and that in a good joint venture, each party walks away feeling like they got the better end of the deal. This is because it harnesses the power of somebody doing something that they would have done for themselves no matter what. And since that's happened, you really can hook into some serious exponential growth and real power. Because at the end of the day, time is limited. Your time is always limited in your life. It's the asset. Your focus and your time is the asset that you need to manage the most. And a joint venture, anytime you're working with other people that they can, you can harness their power while they're just doing what they would do anyway. That allows you to do two things. It allows you to multiply your effects while simultaneously dividing your effort. You want to get the most for least, right? You want to maximize. You want to get the absolute most out of your time, energy, focus, money, everything. And you want to do it with the minimum of effort. So if you're doing, imagine if you, and work 40 hours a week walking every door to door yourself, or you could JV with a bunch of people and they could all do it in an hour what used to take you 40 hours. You see, it's minimizing your efforts and multiplying your effects. So that's the philosophy behind it, and that's what you should be looking to do at all times, and there's no better way to do it than with other people. We'll get into a little bit more mindset too, but I want to stay close to David here and make sure that we're not getting too far off track.
No, this is really good. This is a great definition of JV, joint ventures. Now, and if you would, go into a little bit about the difference between joint ventures and just a straight affiliate marketing, if you would.
Great. Well, an affiliate marketing relationship is, in my opinion, it's already preset. There's sort of a limitation in the way to it. I mean, even though it's allowing you to harness other people's work, I create product X, you become an affiliate for product X. It costs $100. If I sell it myself, I get $100. But if I allow you to sell it through an affiliate link, you get $50 and I get $50. So that is a joint venture in the sense that we both are working for our own private best interests, our own perceived best interests selfishly. But to me, joint venturing is a complete operating system mindset. It's kind of like Windows or your Mac operating system. It's just, it's everywhere at all times, a philosophy, a perspective, a way of looking at things. And that is, instead of how can I get this done, it's who can do this that would be doing it anyway, or who can do this that would do it better than me, and what can I do for them so that they can, you know, we can join venture together and have a mutually beneficial relationship. The thing I always like to ask people the most is the following sentence, and this sentence has gotten me into doors that nobody else has been able to get into. For example, if you're talking to somebody about a project, just simply ask them the following question. How can this project of mine help you achieve your goals? It's very simple. It's extremely powerful. We have to tune our minds into the fact that other people are already working on things. They already have assets. They already have relationships. They already have power that we don't have. And it's much, much easier to tap into that in an easy mutually beneficial exchange than it is to try to push that rock up the hill yourself. And make no mistake, most of us are wired, especially Americans, most of us are wired to do it ourselves. If you've ever seen Atlas carrying the earth on his back, you know, I think they have that statue at Rockefeller Center, David, where you see that guy just straining under the pressure of holding that huge globe, and he's about to just fall down, he can barely stand up. That's you, ladies and gentlemen. That's you day after day after day, straining under the weight of trying to do it all yourself. And what happens is we believe falsely that we should be able to do it all ourselves. Well, I should be able to do HTML. I should be able to do my own graphics. I should be able to make my own web page. Okay, well, maybe you don't. Maybe you can't. Maybe that's not where your strong suit is. But in the meantime, you're trying to do all these things yourself. Pretty much you should all over yourself, because you should do this and you should do that. You're shoulding all over the place. But meanwhile, you're not getting things done, where somebody else could easily do that for you. And if you can just imagine a simple barter, where if you're good at copy editing and somebody else is good at graphics, for example, very, very basic example, I'll do some copy editing for you for an hour, you do some graphics for me. Now, which makes more sense? You doing something that you're already good at, that you could knock out in an hour, or taking an hour to shop for the graphics program, and then taking 3 hours to try to learn it, and then taking 10 hours to try to get good at it? It's already over. You know, there goes your whole life trying to do stuff that you're not strong at. And I think that one of the best examples of this that I've heard is, I believe it was Marcus Buckingham who wrote a book called Discover Your Strengths, or Strengthen Your Strengths, something like that. I highly recommend it. And he talks about how in society we try to make people well-rounded. And I think that most of the time it comes from school. You know, if you get all A's and one C, what does your father and mother say? You got to get that C up, right?
Yep.
Even though you might be totally, totally, you know, the world's most talented biologist, for example. If they see a C in social studies, they're going to say, come on, you got to get that C in social studies up. Well, the truth is, in the world, round things don't cut things. Sharp things cut things. So leave yourself a C in social studies and just focus on your biology. Kill it in biology and become the best you can be so you're really sharp at that. Strengthen your strength. Let your weakness go by the wayside and find somebody else that can help you with that, because time invested in polishing the thing you're best at is far better. You know, it gives you a far better return than you trying to become everything and do everything. I mean, why stop at trying to learn the graphics program? Why not get a soldering iron and a screwdriver out and build your own computer? And while you're at it, why don't you stitch your own clothes and build your own house and cook your own, you know, grow your own food? I mean, where does it end? There's a division of labor. You're happy with it where it is, but you're not happy with it in your pursuit of online business. And that's because we're isolated. We think that, you know, we have to be able to do everything. The false belief is, ready? You think everybody else knows how to do everything. You think you're the only one at the party, and you're hiding your secret shame that you don't know how to do everything because you falsely believe that everybody knows how to do it. But not everybody does. In fact, we mentioned Alice Mendoza, and I mentioned him because I owe him a debt of gratitude for helping me out when I first started with David Corner. He said at that time, hey, I don't know how to do HTML. And it boggled my mind. I said, wait a minute. To myself, while A, I'm trying to learn HTML, and B, not be successful. You see the conflict there? You know, he knows what he knows how to do, and there's a big, big difference between getting things done and doing things yourself. And just because something gets done, our brain immediately jumps to, okay, I guess I have to do this, so how do I do this? And there's where you go wrong. That's the automatic track jump that the train of your brain does. It automatically goes to, well, I guess I have to do it. You have to train yourself to stop that. Because it has to get done, the only thing you have to do is ensure that it does get done. So this requires a whole other, you know, it's funny because we'd rather stay within our uncomfortable comfort zone than step out for a moment of discomfort to learn how to do this stuff. And the people who are flying past you, who are, you know, beating the heck out of you, your competitor who's just blowing your doors off right now, is probably harnessing this, and you're not. You owe it to yourself to be able to do it. Does that make sense, David?
Absolutely. You are preaching it, brother. I really love hearing what you're saying, because this is the mindset of. I'm the perfect example of somebody who thinks you need to know how to do everything. And it really, really held me back for a long time. I wanted to learn HTML. I even wanted to learn PHP so I could write my own programs. And I am the guy who went out and built my own house, you know. So it is something that has haunted me for a long time. And it's that independence spirit that we have drilled into us. We don't need anybody else. We can do it ourselves. You know, it's all of that. It's just crazy. Because we can't.
You know, my father was an entrepreneur. He taught me something that both served me very well and then limited me at the same time. He said, son, if it is to be, it's up to me. And I took that to heart, and I think it made me an entrepreneur. And I think it's wonderful advice. You know, if you don't see the example, be the example. I like that. But there is a limit. To be upstairs, and you came over to David's house, and you saw him with the piano halfway up the stairs, straining against the weight. He's pushing this thing up there, knocking the paintings over off the wall. You know, pulling his back out. You'd say, David, please, that doesn't make any sense. Why are you? You're foolish. Why would you do such a thing? Why didn't you call me? I can come over and help you lift this piano. Several of us could do it in a few minutes. You're spending all day. You're destroying your house. What are you doing? It's foolish.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's what that would be foolish. But meanwhile, look at your life right now. Look at your business. Do you know how many pianos you have halfway shoved up the stairs? And you're heaving and grunting and, oh, as soon as I do this, then I'll be able to get my business. I mean, it's ridiculous, but we don't see it like that because we think we're doing, you know, we wrap ourselves in the entrepreneurial spirit flag and small business is the engine of the economy and I'm doing it. But the real truth is you're holding yourself back. If you could just let go of this solo mindset and say there are other people I can partner with who would be very, very happy to be able to partner with me. I have skills, I have connections, I have, you know, value that other people can tap into as well. So it's not just that I'm asking somebody for a favor. And I think this is where it comes in, and David, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I think this is where the undervaluing comes in. I think we don't give ourselves permission to do this kind of thing because I really think deep down psychologically we believe that we don't have the value. We just undervalue ourselves. I'm not good enough. Somebody will laugh at me. Somebody will say no to me. I will be rejected. And we undervalue the contribution that we have and probably overvalue the contribution other people have. So we will never approach anybody because we're stuck in this bubble of fear that prevents us from actually saying, you know, I have this to offer. You know, once you realize what you have, once you realize you do have a skill set, you do have knowledge, you do have network, you do have, you know, even energy. Heck, if you have nothing else, if you're brand new, you've got trying power. You can go to bat for somebody. You can say, I don't know how to do that, but I can go find out. You can go get coffee. You know, I mean, the point is, whatever it is, you can, you know, help if you try. And if you start to see yourself in a position of power instead of in a position of weakness, you can offer that power to other people. So, David, I'd love to hear your thoughts about that whole value thing, because you come in contact with a lot of entrepreneurs. Do they feel this way?
I most of them feel this way, I think, but the successful ones always believe that they have something to bring to the table. The mega successful ones always believe they are at the head of the table and that they have, that their value is huge. You know, I was listening to the radio on the way into town this morning to come here and get set up in a place where I'm having some internet issues at the house. So a challenge for me is to come in here to this place and do what I need to do at a different place. But I was listening to the radio this morning, and it was a sports a pitcher who was talking about the inner game of baseball. He retired last year, and he had better numbers, better wins in his 40s than he did in his 20s, because he said in his 20s, he had a loser's mindset. He was always afraid of what was going to happen next. And in his 40s, because of his work with a renowned sports psychologist, a mindset guy more than a therapist, he was able to actually go to the mound and figure out exactly how he was going to deliver his best performance. And he saw his best performance. And it, when I was listening to it, it made me think back to when I was probably 25, 26, 27. I played racquetball about 6 or 7 times a week. And I was playing with a woman that I worked with at work, and she was really good. And I always wanted to beat her. I would get to 19, and you played a 21, and I would get to 19, and she would be like at 12 or 13, and I was winning. I was beating her. And I kept thinking to myself, I'm afraid of losing. I'm afraid of losing. I got to work harder. I'm afraid of losing. And of course, I lost every time because I was afraid of losing. I wasn't focused on winning, and I wasn't focused on my skill. I was focused on not doing the things that I had been doing, basically, up to that point. And this is really an awesome way to start this, because when I started doing JVs, when I started doing partnerships with people, even in hiring out folks to do the things I was not good at, that's when my business really turned around. And when I started leveraging the relationships of all of the people I've met over the years, and I'm not saying leverage in a bad way. I'm talking about an exchange of value, an opportunity, basically. That's when the business really takes off. So I'm with you. I think this is just an incredibly important topic, and I think it's incredibly important to understand your value and walk into that room with your value held high.
Mm-hmm. You know, I heard from an old man one time, he said, son, when I was in my 20s, I was worried about what everybody thought of me. When I got to my 50s, I started to say, you know what, I don't even care what everybody thinks of me. And it took me until my 80s to realize that all that time, nobody was thinking about me at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we think other people are thinking about us, but we're really the only ones that do.
We're the only ones. And it took him a lifetime to figure that out. So do yourself a favor, folks. Learn from this gentleman. Don't take till you're 80 to find out that it doesn't matter what anybody thinks. Here's the thing. Whether you believe it or not, you have some value to somebody. Whether you could make a federal case against it in PowerPoint, you know, everything, and prove to me that you don't have value, you're wrong. Have value to somebody. The point is, you have to unlock your mind. They say free your mind and your butt will follow, right? You gotta get out of your own way here, and you gotta get the right things right. And the right thing to get right here is not to define. The right thing to get right is not to figure out how to achieve your goals by yourself. You could do that. You could figure out how to achieve your goals by yourself. You could even reach your goals by yourself. But I tried that and it didn't work. Instead, you might benefit from considering to try to figure out how to reach your goals the quickest and easiest way possible, right? So instead of how am I going to get this done, who's going to get this done? I want to talk about the movie business and the restaurant business really quickly, just to give you some metaphors. May I?
Okay. Sure.
In the movie business, the producer is the person who produces the film. And when we say produce, we mean it in the most fundamental way. You know, as a mother produces a child, you know, causes something to be, produces it, makes it become real. But the producer never writes the script, usually. I mean, very rarely. The producer doesn't get behind the camera and push the buttons and run the tape. The producer doesn't make the sandwiches for craft services or stitch the costumes or paint the scenery, you know. Mm-hmm. The producer sits in the office, in an air-conditioned room, in a desk, and the producer touches two very important things, the phone and the checkbook, and that's it. And yet, this is the person who causes the entire thing to occur, and has the top dog billing, you know, the producer of this movie, you know, even bigger than the director. Producers fire directors. Directors don't fire producers, you know? The producer is the one who produces it. And by having a phone in one hand and a checkbook in the other, you can move mountains. They can actually build a mountain. You know, they can fly a mountain in from somewhere and make a movie on it.
Sure.
That's what a producer does. And this is a person who understands his job is to make sure that things get done. Could you imagine how many movies would be made if the producer thought, well, that's it. I got to go buy a $25,000 camera and go take 2 years of camera training. My movie's right around the corner.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen, right? So you have to switch your mindset. And again, I have to stress, I didn't used to listen to this stuff. I was the biggest skeptic. I said, yeah, this is that airy-fairy, mumbo-jumbo, you know, pie in the sky, kind of like, just believe kind of stuff. I didn't get it. I'm a nuts and bolts guy. Give me the 1, 2, 3 steps, please. You can save the philosophy for Plato and Aristotle. I just got work to do. What's the steps? But the problem is that you keep your eyes too low on your feet. You're looking at steps, but you don't see where you're going. You don't see the bigger picture.
Right.
So you have to understand this philosophy. Mindset precedes strategy. Strategy precedes tactics. First you believe, then you think, and then you do, right?
Now, say that again. Mindset.
Mindset precedes strategy. Strategy precedes tactics, in my opinion.
Okay.
So I could give you the tactics. Go over there and do XYZ, you know, with your hands. Go grab a hammer and the nails and do that thing. That's the tactic. That's the actual thing that we do, the action we take. But before that is the strategy. Why this is a good idea. You know, the way that you're going to get this done is by grabbing a hammer and nails or by grabbing a saw or something. You know, that's the strategy. What way are we going to approach getting this project done, whatever it is? And then what tactics are we going to apply? But ultimately and firstly, it's the mindset. Because if you don't believe that you can do it, you're not ever going to design a strategy, decide on some tactics, and actually carry it out. If you have the wrong mindset, if you believe that the world owes me a living, or I'm stupid and I can't do anything, or you got to be younger, richer, smarter, better looking, taller than I am in order to actually do this, then your mindset's screwed up, and it's just going to trickle right down through the strategy and right down through the tactics. Or worse, it's going to prevent you from ever strategizing and doing tactics at all because your mindset is wrong.
Right.
You have to get it through your head that the mindset is key. And I'm sorry, folks, but you're going to keep coming up against this for the rest of your life. If you're one of those people who tunes out on the mindset, you're costing yourself hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you're one of those people on the flip side that's all mindset and no action, you got to get your butt in gear because you can nod your head at all this stuff all day long. And if this is the 50,000th lesson or podcast you've ever heard, and what you do after listening to this is go back and listen to another mindset program. Enough. You got to move into the next level. So mindset, strategy, tactics. And there's two quick belief thresholds that you have to look at in the mindset. Threshold meaning a line we have to cross. There's two belief thresholds. This is the number one killer. We've got to get this out of the way right up front. If you're not with us on this point, you will be in a minute, and then you can proceed forward. If not, you're never going to make it. Number one, you must believe that it is possible. Whatever we're talking about, making money online, growing your business, hitting the $1 million mark, any of these things, you have an inner thermostat. If you don't believe it's possible to be done at all, you're never going to even try it because it can't be done. If people don't believe that you can make money online, for example, or grow your business, or build an empire out of a little niche of some kind, you know, you're never going to move forward. So that's it. Game over. And then many times we have this, our brain gives us this little cheat. Our mind begrudgingly admits, okay, I'm sure it's possible, you're okay, but I can't do it. So you've got the second belief threshold is that it's possible and it's possible for you. So the escape hatch here for your mind that's trying to stay right and be consistent in its identity and protect yourself from the pain of realizing you maybe have been in your own way this whole time will tell you, okay, well, you've proven to me that it's possible, but that's for other people. That's for the David Perdue's of the world. You know, I mean, that guy, born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Let me tell you.
he didn't have to do any work. He hit the internet lottery.
Yeah.
You really think that? Because now you're doing yourself too much of a service, and you're disrespecting the work of other people. Anybody puts their pants on one leg at a time, just like you. Anybody who has something, they hustled for it, they created it, they sweated for it, they bled for it, and you're in the same role. So when you finally, when the scales fall from your eyes and you finally, you know, the rose-colored glasses fall off and you see the truth is it can be done, you can do it, and meanwhile all this time you've been giving yourself the wrong mindset and you're stuck because it's your own fault and you've got to get out of your own way. I don't mean to be rough with you, but the truth is the faster you figure this out, the faster you can get through and say, oh, okay, A, it is possible, B, it's possible for me, C, let's get my butt in gear and let's get going. So I want to bring up that restaurant metaphor in a minute, but David, I just wanted to jump in because I have a feeling you have something to add to that.
I do have something to add to that. You know, I saw a post on Facebook yesterday that was a question about, is it possible to make money out of thin air? And some of these people online here are members of that same group. And it got my blood boiling. And it wasn't so much that the question was asked. It is that the whole concept, I think, of making money out of thin air is so disrespectful to what it takes to get to the spot where the money comes, because it takes so much work to get to the spot in to build processes that continue to work for you over and over. So when people say, well, the ultimate goal of the internet marketer is to lay on the beach and make money while you're laying on the beach. Sure, that's true. It took you 5 years to get to that spot, though, because you were building a business. You know, that's what every business person wants, is to have sustainable, long-term, recurring income, and especially if it's passive income. But I hate it that we boil these processes down to phrases that disrespect what we do on a daily basis. And you won't hear me talking about that, because I really believe in the work. I really believe in the process. I don't believe in doing more than you have to do. And I love that we're talking about joint ventures because of that. Now,
well, congratulations, David. You're a 20-year overnight success.
Thank you very much. You know, when people say, and yeah, I had to laugh when you said the born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Man, I was born with a dirt spoon in my mouth. And I worked at selling something online for 2 years before I sold something online. I mean, and it was all mindset. It was, you know, it's working for everybody else. Why is it not working for me? And that was the reason. And I went to a coach at that point and said, why am I not making money online? And he said, have you decided to? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, have you decided you want to make money online? That you can, that you will, that you are making money online. And I don't think I'd made that decision yet. And when I made that decision, things turned around. I think you have to get straight with yourself and you make a decision that it's going to work. So I want to mention one other thing, though. You set up here, reach your goals the quickest and easiest way possible, and don't ever do this alone. Have you heard of Keith Ferrazzi?
I have not.
He's written a book that I loved, and I picked it up about 5 years ago. It's called Never Eat Alone, and you should check it out. Keith, in fact, if you get on his list, he sends you a daily tip as well, which is really good about networking and mentoring and those kind of things. But Keith wrote a book. This book called Never Eat Alone, and he maintains a Rolodex on his phone of 5,000 people that he contacts every week personally, because he is out there trying to find people. He's a connector. You know, he's putting people together that can leverage a relationship, and that's what we're talking about here as well. And by doing that, he's made himself so valuable to these 5,000 people or more now that you know, he gets on an A list of everything. So he's the guy.
And you bring up such a good point. I'm going to let you guys know something, that in some way the odds can be stacked a little bit for you or against you, meaning that depending on your personality type, this stuff might come naturally or not naturally. I highly encourage everybody to take a Myers-Briggs personality type test. It's a four-section test, and one of the first section is you're either an E or an I, extroverted or introvert. So you might be an ESTJ or an ISTJ or an ENFP or an INFP. And for those of us who are extroverts, we're just naturally more likely to, you know, talk to people, mingle at a party, whatever. So if you're an I, and you're either one or the other, nobody doesn't score on this. Nobody ever breaks the test where you're neither. You have to be one or the other. It's just science. If you find that you're one of the people that it doesn't come so easy to, then I'm sorry that this is going to be a little more difficult for you, or has been more difficult for you. You may look around and say, why am I not like this person or that person? Well, maybe you're wired in a different way. There's 16 different combinations of types, and the Myers-Briggs test is, it's a temperament test. It's deep science. It's very smart. It's very reliable. And if you can find out what you are and what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, you don't have to necessarily be the most gregarious guy at the party who's out there, you know, slapping backs and kissing babies and telling jokes that everybody laughs at. You don't have to be that guy. You just have to understand your value, and you have to be able to trade that value in the marketplace in order to maximize your efforts and not sit there and try to do it the slowest way possible. Look at all of the if you haven't grown all the food that you've ever eaten and dug it out of the ground and cleaned it and cooked it and everything, if you've ever eaten a meal at a fast food restaurant, you're leveraging something from somebody else. That's a JV, you know? I mean, you can look at anything as a JV. A parent and a child is a JV. Two best friends is a JV. A boss and an employee is a JV. A president of the nation is a JV. The we get in these mutually beneficial partnerships where we each add our best value. But when it comes to the area of business, for some reason, we get these blinders on, and we go radio silent. We just get in our heads, and that's it. I got to do this all myself. I think there was a step, a list of the steps that are required to make a pencil. You look it up on the internet, and there's, 48 steps or something to take a tree pencil, right? It's an incredible amount of joint venturing that goes into that. But if you're sitting there at your kitchen table, you know, the problem about the internet is also its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. You've heard, you can make money from your kitchen table at 3 o'clock in the morning in your underwear.
Right.
At home. Well, you know, good, because it beats digging a ditch. So let's frame this properly. Yes, that's helpful. But at the same time, you're sitting at the kitchen table in your underwear in the dark at 3 o'clock in the morning, staring at your computer. Weird, you know? That's not how business has usually been done all over the world throughout life. I mean, most of the time, B2B used to mean belly to belly.
Right.
You would get out there with people, you know, face to face. Remember people's faces? Remember before you had text and all that stuff? So the computer is high tech, but it's low touch. So what it did, what it has brought you in advantages, it has taken away in disadvantages, and these are invisible disadvantages that you're not seeing. So it's holding you back. So you have to check your personality type, you have to check your mindset, and most of all, you have to understand your value. So I'm going to give you the restaurant metaphor. I want to, for once and for all, put everything that ever might be holding you back in your mind. I want to get all that stinking thinking flushed out of your head, get you up to speed, and get you ready to do JVs. Okay, so listen very carefully. I don't know who's listening to this, but if you're smart enough to be on David Perdue's list, if you're smart enough to be thinking about making money online, then let's say, to be kind, you're in the top 50% of the bell curve, okay? You don't have to be in the top 2%, but you're probably in the top 50%, so you're in the smarter half of the universe, okay? So that being said, you're probably, if I asked you, do you think you could be halfway successful as a waiter or a waitress? If I gave you a job and you had to feed your family and be a waiter or a waitress, do you think you'd be able to do well enough so you wouldn't get fired? And almost invariably when I teach this at seminars, people say, I guess so. You know, yeah, sure. Raise your hand if you think you could probably hack it and not get completely fired and burn the place down as a waiter or waitress. Most people say, okay, yeah, sure, I could probably do they're looking for a particular thing. People gather together at a restaurant. They're looking for a particular solution to a problem. They're hungry. They all go to the same place. They gather there. They express their need to the waiters and waitresses. The waiter or waitress goes to the kitchen, expresses those needs, communicates those needs to the cook. The cook cooks the food, hands it back to the waiter or waitress. They perform their job of carrying a tray of that solution to the person, and then they get paid for it. And then they go home and they spend that money. A waiter or waitress's main job is to ask what you need, take that request to the source of the solution, and then bring it back to you. So asking, walking, carrying, you know, these are, children can do this, right? If you can do that, you can join venture, you can make money online, you can grow your business to a $1 billion level. It's easy, because the person who's getting the steak at the restaurant does not care whether or not you cook the steak. They do not care whether or not you are the biggest steak expert in the world, if you are a licensed steakologist. They don't even care who cooked it. They just care if it tastes good. They just care if they get a solution to their problem. And the internet is a place where people gather who have common problems, looking for solutions, and they ask, and then other people find that information and give that to them. You see where we're going here? It's no different than being a waiter or a waitress. It's that easy. It's that uncomplicated and childlike in its simplicity. You're making it complicated because you're sticking all of your mindset in there about, well, I'm not good enough, and people who are successful are X, Y, Z, and not me. You're getting all that mental noise, and you've got to flush out that stinking thinking. If you can make it as a waiter or a waitress, you've got everything it takes to JV, because all you have to do is walk up to somebody and say, what would you like? How can I help you? Can I take your order today? What are you interested in? What can I do for you? You see? And the waiter comes back after a little while, checks in on you. Is everything okay here? I mean, this is not rocket surgery. You know, it's pretty simple stuff. But if you're not going to get out of your head, then you're never going to ask anybody. And the only way I've ever been successful in this stuff is by getting out of my own head, getting out of my own way, realizing it's not all about me, it's all about we, and involving other people. And yeah, I've got this project. I don't know if it might be a good fit for you, David, but let me tell you about it, and you tell me if it's a good fit, if we should proceed. I tell them a little bit, and I say, how can this project help you achieve your goals? Where are you headed? What would you like to get done? What is NAMS doing? Where are you moving forward? Where are your challenge areas? What's keeping you up at night? What are you looking for? Who could you meet that might be able to assist you? Or might I be able to do for you? And by asking all these questions, you're taking his order. And you listen, there are a million people standing in line to talk to David Perdue with their hands out. There's a line around the block. Hey, can you give me this? Can you give me that? But the line of what can I do for you? David, how long is that line for you?
Yeah, that line of what can I do for you is non-existent.
You might be able to walk up to that line and be first in line, folks.
That's right.
Not hard.
Yeah. So I want to make a comment about your waiter. The thing I love about this, and it just occurred to me, is we call that service industry, and we say that kind of snidely sometimes. You know, that's a service industry job, or the only job I can get is in the service industry. If you don't understand we're all in the service industry, then you're not a JV marketer.
Mm-hmm. You know, people work really hard at this, and then they say, Sterling, I've been working really hard, man, for hours, and it's 10, 20 hours a week, 3-4 years, and I really deserve DE, which means of, day, you know, and serve, which is service. To deserve something is to be of service. So who are you serving? Who are you being of service to? Who wins when you win? Who succeeds when you succeed? Who fails when you fail? If the answer to this question is nobody because I'm not here on my own, then there's your answer, and you're probably looking exactly why you're not successful as you want to be, because you don't deserve it, not meaning because you didn't work hard, but because you worked hard on your own, for yourself, by yourself, and it's not a me thing, it's a we thing. Don't you think that competition is teamed up? Don't you think the guy across the street has more connections and is working this stuff harder than you or trying to get there? Why would you possibly hamstring yourself? Why would you possibly tie one arm behind your back by saying, no, that's okay, I'm going to fight this battle alone. Everybody else is fighting it as a team. I want to come in here by myself. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I understand why, because we're not wired for this, and people don't teach this stuff. So, David, I think you nailed it. Service. You just try to be the person who's of service the most to anybody else that you meet, greet. Hey, what can I do for you? How can I help you? Go get a business card that says your name on it, and then underneath that it says professional solutionist. Hand it out. I don't know if I have the answer for you, but I can find out. I'll be right back. You know who you should model yourself after, folks? A concierge at a 5-star hotel. Right? The
yep.
Concierge, you say, yes, I'm in town for the week, Mr. Concierge, and I'd like to go hang gliding and then buy a pogo stick and then go to the moon. And he says, yes, sir. Let me see what I can do for you, right? One moment, please. I'll find the answers to that, and I'll get right back to you. And this guy doesn't know anything about pogo sticks, maybe, or hang gliding or whatever, but he doesn't have to. He says, you got it. Stand by. I'll find out for you. Can you do that? Is that really difficult for you? Does he get asked? Well, first, before I ask you to help me, Mr. Concierge, do you have a degree in hand? I need this. And he says, right away, sir, I'll get right back to you. And then he makes calls, he pulls in favors, he does whatever he has to do. You can do that. You can be concierge level focused for your people. And the reason that I'm on this call with David is I must have done something right in doing that to be able to earn this place, because he could ask any internet marketer, any professional business person from all over the world. Why did he ask me? Because somewhere along the way, I was concierge level service enough to him that I got on his radar and I'm here. And that's the way it works.
Yeah.
You need to do that too.
That's absolutely a great point. So I'm one of those guys who has the mindset. I've always had mindset issues because I really have to work hard at it. I mean, I had some stuff drilled in me when I was a kid that, you know, mm-hmm. never good enough, not perfect, all that kind
mm-hmm.
of stuff.
Hard to get those tapes out, right?
It is incredibly hard to get those tapes out. And one of my biggest ones was about money. You know, it was about money was something other people had, not us. And so I've worked really hard at getting the mindset correct. Do you have any kind of practical things that you do to help with your mindset?
Well, first of all, a great, great question, and thank you for being so forthcoming and honest about your previous tapes, because most people don't talk about that stuff. That's taboo. We don't talk about that. I put my suit on and my tie on, and I go out and do you. Oh, but wait, there's something wrong? And we're talking about it? Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. So thank you for your courage to just tell the truth and tell it like it is, because you probably already liberated people who said, you know, my father used to say that to me too. You know, wow. So check your tapes, folks. If you don't think this stuff affects you, there's your problem right there. It does, and we have to look at our limiting beliefs. And the thing about limiting beliefs is, these were things that were put there before you had the ability to even know that there was such a thing. So you were pre-programmed before you had a chance. It's not fair. You're a kid. You know, the world didn't come up to you and say, which beliefs would you like to have, limiting ones or unlimiting ones?
Right.
You said, I'll take the limiting ones, please. Alex, I'll take I don't believe in myself for $200. It's not fair, but they're there anyway. It's not your fault, but it is your problem, and you have to deal with it. So, David, big kudos to you for that. And I want everybody to know that we all have something like that. So that being said, what do we do about limiting beliefs? What do we do about looking at how we feel about this stuff? Well, you have to be honest with yourself. You have to be sober and clear-eyed, and you have to really think deep and look at this stuff. Get under there in the end of the mud with your fingernails and really look at what you believe and what you're willing to do and not do. And I want to tell you that everybody has a money thermostat. Everybody has a thermostat that says what they're okay with, what they're comfortable with, and what they're not comfortable with. And you don't know that you have it. You didn't set it on purpose. It's a combination of what you've seen and heard, where you've been, what your parents believe, what your friends and relatives and who you grew up with believe. Everybody has a thermostat in their mind, whether it's about money or success or achievement or anything. And the thermostat works the same way a regular thermostat works. If you've ever run a thermostat in your home, you set it for 70 degrees, and if it's too cold, the heat comes on, and when it reaches 70 degrees, the heat stops, as to not let the place just heat up forever. If there's no thermostat, if there's no limit, or they call it a governor or a limiter, then the heat will stay on, and it will get 80, 90, 100, and everybody will cook, right? It's too hot. So you limit it. And the same thing is once it gets 70 degrees at the tie out, then it cuts off, and if it gets cooler than that, it turns on. Same thing with the air conditioning in the reverse way. So a thermostat allows us to stay within a range, a comfortable range. If it's too low, it moves it up. If it's too high, it moves it down. Look at how you do that with money, with achievement, with JVing, with speaking to other people. You have a limit. Well, you know, $50,000 a year, sure, I can make that. He makes that, I make that, my brother made that, that's fine. But $500,000? Oh, I mean, that's just for somebody else. That's not for me.
Right.
And you don't realize that you think that way. You don't literally wake up in the morning and you say, honey, I'm advancing a little too quick at work. I think I need to subtly, secretly sabotage myself here so that I don't get too far. We don't want to make too much money. I mean, nobody talks like that. You have to understand the power of your subconscious and, you know, you dream, don't you? Your dreams show you that your brain is working on stuff that you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you had that dream yesterday where you were flying around or something that you didn't do that. That's your brain working on stuff behind the scenes. It's very, very powerful, the human mind. So if you sleep on this stuff and just dismiss it, you know, if you poo-poo this kind of thing, you're missing out. You're a resident in your brain. You're not your whole brain here. Your mind lives in there with a lot of you do things that you don't even know you're doing. If you get uncomfortable, all of a sudden I might get a lot more money. I don't know how I feel about that. My friends will think I sold out. What do I do? Will people still like me? Whatever it is, all kinds of stuff. Do some reading. Go to the Amazon, look at the top selling psychology books, read one of them, and you'll find out what all that we don't know about the mind. That being said, if you understand it and it's become disclosed and distinguished to you, now you say, oh, there's this thing. Okay, well, where do I feel comfortable? Where do I stop? What would make me uncomfortable? Is there something that might make me uncomfortable about having more money or meeting more people? What are some of my negative beliefs if, let's say, I tried this on? I mean, I hear you, Sterling, I hear you, David, you're telling me I should be a JV guy, okay. But every time I try it on in my mind, it just, I don't know, I feel weird. Like I'd be that guy at the party who's obnoxious and overbearing, and I'm walking up talking to anybody. Hi, I'm great. How are you? I'm fantastic. Ask me about weight loss. You know, I don't want to be that guy. Okay, good. Isolate that. Freeze that frame. You associate doing JVs with people perceiving you as being rude or arrogant or obnoxious. Did you see that? get that. Root that thing out and pull it out by the weeds, because that is not what that is. That is a negative limiting belief that you have, that you've imposed over something. I didn't have people come up to me saying, dude, you're so obnoxious. They said, wow, thank you for involving me in your project. You see? So whatever you're thinking that is, it's not that. You've just stuck that in there because somewhere along the way, you saw somebody who was rude and obnoxious and you didn't like that, or somebody maybe told you you were or mistook you for that or whatever it is, and you said, oh, that feels painful. I don't want that. And I'll do anything I can to avoid that pain. And now you're not going to JV because of that. Or you might say, well, when I was young, you know, I had a similar example. My father was an entrepreneur. David, I'll tell you a little story of mine on the limitation of money.
Sure.
And I remember being at a store with my mother, sitting in the shopping cart. So however little you have to be to sit in the shopping cart, that's how little I was in that little chair. And I reached out for something. I wanted something. And my mother said, we can't have that. Put that back. We don't have the money for that. And I think a week later, my father came home and said, guess what? We're going to Disney World. Well, my father was an entrepreneur. It's feast and famine with entrepreneurs, ups and downs. It was a down moment when I wanted that little whatever it was, toy or something. And it was an up moment when my father came home telling us we're all going to Disney World. But in my mind, it told me, well, money's here one day and gone the next. You don't know when you're going to get it again. You better spend it because it's crazy. It's up and down. It's not consistent. You see?
Yep.
I didn't even know that I put that together like that. I was so little. How did I know, right? But this is the kind of thing where you look at it and you pull it apart and you say, so I really think that, you know, I better spend it when I have it, or I better hold on to it because I never know when I'm going to get it again. Like, who told me that? Well, nobody. My mother said this thing. My father said that thing. I'm a kid. I put two and two together. Not exactly the right way. And boom, there you go. Your entire adult life is formed by this thing you can't even see. David, is that how it works?
That is exactly how it works, man. I grew up in a house of there were five kids in my household, and I was the oldest. So when I was the oldest, we're getting psychology here. This is really weird, but it is important to understand what drives your decisions today so that you can make those changes.
Yeah, it's everything.
So I was the oldest of five. When I was 12 years old, when I was 9 years old, my grandfather died, and my mother's four brothers and sisters moved in with us, and they were 12, 15, 18, and 20. So all of a sudden became like my brothers and sisters, but I went from being the oldest who ran the household to the middle. And it was an abrupt overnight change, and it changed the way we had money, it changed the way we did things, it changed who got attention, it changed everything like that. And so I had to readjust my entire world, and what it meant for me was being incredibly independent. Don't rely on anybody. And that's been a tough one all my life to break. And now I break it so often I look for other people that I can get to do things for me. Because it's easier, it's faster.
Right. You're trying to go the complete opposite way now to fix it and make sure you're not doing it anymore.
That's right.
And a little thing like that, so some kid moved into your house, I don't understand. Hey man, that can have a huge deep psychological effect. It can change your game strategy. So now this poor man doesn't understand that this happened to him. He's walking around and somebody says, hey, David, I can help you with that and make your project come true faster and even better than your wildest dreams. And he says, no thanks, because
exactly.
I'm going to trust you.
Exactly. It's that whole trust issue, because I'll give you a really good example. This we just did this big hangout with Alex Mandosian and a bunch of NAMS instructors, and that was a very successful joint venture project. I resisted doing that because a joint venture broker came to me that I didn't particularly trust, because I hadn't allowed myself to trust that person. I always thought people are out to get you. They want something from you. That person has not made $1 from this. They didn't ask me for anything. They were being of service. And I had to allow that to happen and get to a place where I was where I felt like, well, because somebody else is doing this for me, it's okay. It's not that I had to go out and make the contact myself. I had to beg somebody else to do it, you know, all those kind of things. So it's really a mindset shift. And Sterling, I don't know if this is you or not, but I continually have to work on that, because they don't go away. I always say my first thought's not my thought. My second thought is my thought. My first thought is the old thought.
Listen, those tapes are so ingrained that you're going to spend your life trying to fight them, and the best you can do is be constantly vigilant. And the minute you think you beat them, the minute you think that you're no longer affected by them, you have to realize they're out there doing push-ups in the parking lot, just waiting for you to get sloppy.
That's right.
Come right back and jump you again.
That's right.
You're going to get attacked by your own mind. So you have to be ruthlessly vigilant. In fact, you know, the only way to be sure is to actually do the exact opposite, to purposefully do the exact opposite at any moment. So now, you know, it's been so many years I've already tried to, you know, train myself out of that habit that every time I go to an event, I got to go walk up to people and meet people. I just absolutely have to. I just say, hey, how are you? What are you working on? You know, what's going on? How can I help you? I just force myself to. So it becomes so habitual, so automatic that it overwrites those other patterns, and I never even have a chance to slip into the decision-making process, because if I try to decide, maybe I'll decide the wrong way, you know? So I just jump in and swim. I just make sure that within the first 5 minutes, I'm already meeting people. I haven't played this game where I introduce two people. And I introduce them. Yeah, Bob's in the accounting business, and Steve over here, he does this, and you know, you guys might have some overlap, and it's just so funny to hear him later on. They'll say, yeah, so how long have you known Sterling, Bob? And he says, oh, I just met him. And the other guy says, wait a minute, I just met him too. Good. So I'm introducing people who don't even know each other. That means I definitely am playing out full, you know, and there's no way, that's my test, no way that I'm limiting myself in any way. I'm out there, which is very important. And good.
I was just going to say, so what I do every day, I have a friend who I call on a regular basis, and you know, my first question is always, how you doing? And he's really honest with me. Some days he says, I'm doing great, things are going really well. Some days he says, my brain attacked me this morning.
Yeah.
You know, and that's exactly, it's a perfect metaphor, because it's exactly what happens. We get in the dumps, we feel things that aren't going our way, and his brain attacks him. Now, when his brain attacks him, and I do this as well, he stops everything. And he goes and sits, does a little meditation. He reads the right kind of material that gets his brain right. And so he really, that's a kind of a reboot. He just does a reboot on his brain mm-hmm. when he realizes that happens. And you can only realize that happens if you are willing to take the time to slow down and say, what's going on? And I think that's the very first step in changing it.
You're already perceiving the world. You're already listening to this message. Everything you're already doing through a set of filters and a set of beliefs and a complex arrangement of neurons and synapses that have already set you up for success or failure. And then you're going to wake up in the morning either, you know, empowered or inhibited, and you're going to try to run the race. And you think that you're trying to run the race like everybody else, but the truth is, you may be carrying a 100-pound pack on your back. There's a great, great old story about an old man sitting outside of the city walls of an ancient city, and a traveler on a horse comes along and says, old man, I'm a newcomer to your city. Tell me of the people who live here. And the old man asks him, tell me about the people where you're from. And the guy says, well, where I'm from, everybody's generous, they're warm, they always will help you if you need help, they invite you in, and they do their best to assist you. This is the type of people that I know where I'm from. And the old man says, well, then it is fortunate for you, because you will meet the same type of people here in this city, in our city. And it's a good day, and the horseman rides into the city. Later on that day, another rider comes along and says, old man, I'm coming to your city. Tell me of the... They're liars and cheats and thieves, and they'll screw you over any chance that they get. You have to always be cautious, because you can't trust anybody there. And the old man says, well, I'm sorry, it's very unfortunate for you, because you're going to find those people here too.
Yep. And that's the way it is, right?
You're already, before you ever walk through the city walls, you're already going to walk into a certain city, depending on what you're bringing with you, right? So what are you bringing with you, and how can you change that? And I have to mention one small thing, David. It's vital that I do this. We're barely scratching the surface of brain chemistry science. And if you have any sort of anxiety, any of these things, this is something that we don't talk about. It's taboo still in society to talk about this stuff in business. You know, we still believe in the whole, everybody's equal, everybody's starting on a clean slate, we all started exactly the same starting line, and if you don't succeed, it's because you didn't try hard enough, you have a willpower failure issue, and that's all it is. But the truth is, we don't all start with the same brain. They've scanned criminal brains using nuclear medicine. They've used SPECT imaging, fMRIs, PET scan, and in prison they've scanned criminal brains and they have overheated anger sensors like crazy. These guys were already born ready to fight. And it wasn't. I'm not saying it's nobody's fault. I'm just saying it's not all the same. We're not all starting at the same benchmark. So if you're feeling an incredible amount of anxiety or tension around this stuff, you might want to take a look at that. If you're saying, hey, I keep trying to do that, but I keep forgetting to do that, you may want to look at that stuff. If you feel overwhelmed constantly, whatever it is, whether it's anxiety, depression, ADD, or any other number of things, if your brain chemistry is not tuned right, then you're already, to some degree, it's over before it starts. So I highly suggest reading Dr. Daniel Amen and anybody else you can get your hands on about current brain science, because you'd be surprised how much of this affects us and we don't talk about it. So if, for example, if you have bad vision and I have good vision and they both set us in front of the chalkboard, I wouldn't be able to see better than you and you need glasses. But if they don't tell you that you need glasses, I guess you're not trying hard enough over there, but you're squinting because you can't see the board. Well, then you would go get glasses, right? Easy. You would never feel funny about getting glasses. Many of you listening now have glasses or contact lenses. You don't feel like it's a cheat. You don't feel like, you're not working hard enough. Get those glasses off you. You're cheating. You don't feel like that. You feel fine about it. Hey, I need glasses. Okay, well, maybe your brain needs glasses. So it's worth looking into. It's worth examining. It's taboo in society still, but it won't be long forever. Pretty soon, we'll be starting to check people's brains, and we'll say, wow, you have such an overheated emotional center. Your hypothalamus is on fire compared to the average, normal statistical scan. Wow, you must be worried about everything. Let's give you a pill for that and dial that down a little bit. So it may be controversial. You may not agree, David. I meet people who agree. I meet people who don't agree. But I'm telling you that I've experienced it firsthand in myself and other people in my family and my business partners and friends. And this is something that is even more baseline than the baseline. It's more even more operating system than your mindset, because your software that you run in your mind runs on the hardware of your brain, your actual tissue of your brain. So if that's screwed up, if you're listening to me right now and you're hearing 10 other voices, come on, you got to get that looked at. What I am going to say right now is that it's trumped by that. That thing will beat what I'm saying every day of the week, and I could be telling you the exact truth and these next steps to go get $1 trillion in 5 seconds, but you're not going to be able to employ it because you've got a hardware issue that's hurting your software issue. So I wish somebody would have said that to me. I wish people were talking more about this, but you said it perfectly. They level the playing field, fix any of the hardware issues, and then, of course, still, fix the software. Start changing your beliefs and everything, but check the hardware first.
Okay, so just give me 1 second here. And people are saying you need to speak up just a tad because you're fading in and out a little bit.
Okay, I'll move the mic a little bit closer. Is that better?
Not much, actually. Try it again.
Well, I'm just about eating the microphone.
There you go. There you go. That's better. Yeah, that's good. Okay, so I think we've covered mindset really well today. And
I think we did it to death, man.
But it was really good. And people have been saying in here that they would like more of this at NAMMS, that they really relate to this. Let's see. Somebody said, "What if you're hearing 20 voices in your brain?"
Well, you got to tell the first 10 voices to tell the other 10 voices to keep it down.
That's right. That's right. And let's see. So somebody else said that mindset was the hardest shift. It took me the longest time to figure that out, to change that stuck mindset, and that's a fact. It takes a while to figure that out, but when you can get that moving, and it really is that decision thing. I mean, it's kind of like if you're going to be independent and take charge, that's the thing you take charge of, in my mind. That's the thing that you do everything you can to get ahead of, whether it means that you have to fix the hardware, like you said, or that you have to reboot, or you have to investigate, whatever it takes to understand what your mindset is, and then work on making those changes. So we've spent a lot of time on mindset today, and I want to get into, we've set a great stage for why JV partnerships work and don't work, and how you can take advantage of them. And I think we need to shift into some tactical stuff. Are you up for that?
Absolutely. And David, I have to commend you. What an incredible service you're doing to create the space where entrepreneurs can talk about this kind of stuff. You are the prime mover here. You are the producer of this, and you decided to use your time and energy to create a space where we can discuss these things, we can bring them out into the open, we can drag them out into the light of day and fix them. What a tremendous service you're doing. You're the kind of person that I want my children to be learning from, that I want my students to be learning from. So this is where you need to be, folks. This is where the action's happening. This is good stuff.
Yeah, people don't talk about this much. Too many people, it's not sexy, you know? It's not blueprint. And
yeah,
if it's not a blueprint.
And it doesn't fit in with the whole societal, we're all equal, and if you fail, it's because you didn't try hard enough, and, everything's willpower. And before, if you were schizophrenic, they told you were a witch, and they burned you at the stake. So it shows you how much society knows sometimes,
Right, right. Okay, so if you wanted to get started doing joint ventures in your niche, and your niche is, any niche. Let's just we've got a lot of people on here who are not in the internet marketing world.
Right.
I am like make money online biz op kind of thing, which is what I love. I love those people who are doing businesses. So if you're getting started as a joint venture, what's the first thing you do?
Well, we've talked about tuning your hardware and tuning your software, right? So the very next thing we want to do is we want to start putting ourselves in the mindset of the other person. I think it was Dan Kennedy who said, enter the conversation that's already occurring in somebody else's mind. Look, everybody in the world is walking around with their umbilical cords in their hand looking for some place to plug in. And they have the same needs and wants and desires as you and I. But we have to start tuning ourselves to everybody else, because we are, from children, we are selfishly tuned to our own selves. And Stephen Covey teaches us that we have three levels of growth: dependence, independence, and interdependence. But most of the time, the jump from dependence to independence is the only jump we make. We think, I used to be an infant, I needed my mother so I could eat, I couldn't help myself, and then I grew up, and now I'm independent, I no longer need that. End of story, right? But the truth is it's not, because there's one more level, interdependence. You have to start tuning yourself to the idea that your best work is yet to come, because you have the key inside of you to help other people, just like they have the key to help you. So if you're going to go out there and try to do JVs tactically, but still go in there with that independent sort of mindset, you're going to start doing them wrong. So I'm preventing your very first mistake, because you're going to start talking like somebody who wants stuff, right? And that you've got the direction right, but you've got the way to go wrong, right? So what we have to do is actually start thinking WIIFM. Imagine everybody's got an antenna on their head, and they're tuned to the radio station WIIFM. What's in it for me? So you have to rephrase all of your language. You have to re-look at your approach and start talking to people as if you're on their team. You're a shareholder in their company. You're a stakeholder. You're an owner of them. You're a beneficiary of them. So when I talk to David, I don't talk about, now listen, David, I've got this going on and I've got that going on because I'm great and I do all this stuff and me. I start to talk to David because I need to become an expert on NAM, but I need to become an expert on David to do, where the strengths, where the weaknesses, where the opportunities, where the threats are, where we're headed, where we've been. I need to become an expert on my partner's place and position and movement, direction, goals, so that I can best be a trusted advisor and help make the right decision. So you have to put yourself on the board of the other person. Let me be honest with you. In the movie of your life, I'm just a bit player. David Perdue's just a bit player. You only care about us to the degree that we can help you with something. And the second that you tune us out and moved on, you hang up and we're no longer relevant, because you're the star of your own life, right? Well, it's that way with you for other people. When you're talking to somebody else, imagine that the only thing they hear is blah, 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 and then them, and then blah, 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 and then them again. People are only listening most of the time. They're being polite, of course, but most of the time people are about their own thing. And if you start coming up and talking to them, the longer you talk about them, about your stuff, the more they're going to tune you out, because they're saying, listen, this guy's just talking in my face, blah, 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 but it's not about me. Meanwhile, I'm talking about my stuff in my head. So you're just going to get kind of tuned out. Instead, start approaching people as if you want to be the MVP, the most valuable player on their team. This is a decision that you make. It's a strategic decision that turns into a tactical approach. You need to be the MVP on anybody's team. You need to contact every single person you know today. And whether you tell them you've had an epiphany you know, you've gotten religion around the whole JV thing, or you don't tell them anything and you just start doing it. Either way, I don't care. Contact everybody you know, at least contact the top three people you know and say, you know, I really need to ask, what have you been up to lately? What are you working on? Where are you headed? You know, I don't spend enough time checking in with you, right? What do you got going? Maybe I can help somewhere. And depending on how strange this is to you, people might fall out of their chair, but that's okay, you know? It's a new day. And start to become an expert. Start to become the MVP. Start asking them questions like a waiter or waitress. So, is there something you might need? Is there anything I can do to help? And most of the time, people are so unused to hearing this. People are so shocked to hear this that their automatic response comes in. And what do they say? Oh, no, that's okay, man. No, I got this. I'm cool. Thanks anyway. Because yep. They're so used to looking like, I have to be Atlas. So I can't accept any help. You see? Well, we all got the same disease, right? A round of crazy for everybody here at the table because we're all kind of a little crazy. So you really have to work now at helping them. Say, you know, maybe you can even fake it by saying, hey, you know, I met this person. Is this the kind of person you might need to talk to? Or, okay, well, who would you need to talk to? Or maybe you could clip an article and send it to them. Just start to be a resource. Start to be a networker. Start to be a helper. Just start to be a listener even. Be a sounding board. Maybe even create a mastermind group. This is easy to do, and if we have time, we can focus on how to do that. I don't want to get too far off. But a mastermind group is one of the best ways you can practice in a closed environment, being a JV partner, being a JV partner. So I'm going to look to David for direction on when and how to talk about mastermind, because I don't want to get too far off field. But do the best thing, the best job you can at being an asset to these people. Make a difference. You know, when Steve Jobs was alive, the founder of Apple, he said, I want to leave a dent in the universe when I go. So you don't have to leave a dent in the universe, but at least try to leave a dent in the people's lives that you're in contact with. You know, they say check the five people you're closest to and total up and average their net worth, and that's your net worth. So you might even consider trading up a little bit there. Start hanging out with people who have a higher net worth than you. You know, your net worth determines your net worth and your value to that net worth. And again, don't think this is complicated. Don't think, well, my buddy's a brain surgeon, so I have to become a brain surgeon to help him, or I'm of no use to him. You could just look on Amazon, and if there's a brain surgery book that's in the top 10, you can say, hey, I heard about there's this book. Did you know that? You know, just try to help. Try to show up a little bit. Get out of your comfort zone. Get out of your own self-interest and show up for somebody else. Be there. The most valuable player on the team is an award in baseball, and it doesn't always necessarily go to the person who's had the most home runs. This is very important, David. I don't know how many people realize this. They don't always give the MVP award, most valuable player, to the guy who makes the most scores, whatever that is, football, baseball. They give it to the guy or girl who's most valuable to the team. You see the distinction here? Big difference. Not to the hotshot who scores the most baskets or goals or whatever. The MVP is the one who's most valuable, the most valuable player to the entire enterprise, to the team itself. Maybe that's the person who has the best spirit or keeps everybody's morale high or has the most assists. You know, that's a statistic in sports. Who shot the puck to the guy before he shot the goal? Who passed the basketball to the guy who shot the basket? Sometimes the guy who does all the assists is the most valuable player because he sets everybody up to win. You have to look at this stuff and really tune yourself into what's in it for me. That's what the other people are thinking. So now you become the MVP and try your butt off to try to make an impact and make a difference. Send people clippings, emails, ask them what you can do. You know, take them out to lunch, ask them about their business. You'd be amazed at how little we actually pay attention to our companions on this journey.
You know, we talked about, I'm stumbling here because I want to say this clearly. It's really difficult to remove the mindset piece from any of this because one of the things we talked about earlier was being of service to people. And we talked about rebooting your brain when you're in the wrong mindset. And one of the best ways to reboot your brain is to find out how you can help somebody else. And to me, that's the reason I love doing the NAMS workshop, by the way. I am, every 6 months, I get such a rush. It's like filling up my spiritual tank because to me, I am bringing together 300, 400, 500 people into an area and letting them build relationships together to help each other and manifest what they want in their lives together by introducing them, you know, and creating that container that makes that happen. I don't have to be involved in all of that. I just get to watch it. And just because I have the opportunity to bring those people together, it just fills me up. And I love doing that. And that reboots me. That's exactly what you're talking about here. In my mind, is that people then identify with each other how they can be of greater service to one another. The thing that I find, though, is when my brain has attacked me, where I go to is, how can I get more money out of you? You know? And that is one of my key indicators for it's time to reboot. Because if I'm thinking about how I can help myself faster, then I'm on the wrong path. Now, because I truly believe that helping others is where it's going to come back and help me more in the long run. Can you believe the, I've gotten so much just in 5 days from putting that hangout together with Alex over the weekend. I mean, we had 12 instructors, 4-hour hangout. I got an education on how to do hangouts. From watching this whole thing, I'm an expert on doing hangouts now. I know how to do it. That's one of the things. The other thing is that I learned how to put together a YouTube live page. That was interesting. I learned how to work with a team to make sure that a hangout runs smoothly in the background. I worked with JV partners to bring people into that whole system. And on the surface of it, I didn't get much out of it. But if I want to be really in the wrong frame of mind about it, I can sit here and say, oh, well, we didn't make enough sales. I didn't get enough people on my list. My exit pop-up didn't work on my site. I really screwed up, you know? But the truth is that it was a huge success. I did a great service for Alex by proving his mega hangout worked. We were the first one. And so I've got a good friend for life now there. And that's what that was about. And I have to remember that what that was about was providing the service. Both directions. Mm-hmm. That was a perfect JV for me.
Yeah, and it's not just the assets you retain are not just financial.
I'm sorry, say that again. I couldn't hear you.
The return that you get is not just financial.
No.
It's relationship, it's skills, experiences, right?
Yep. Somebody asked me why the NAMS membership, the NAMS workshop was such a low price, because it's pretty much lower right now than anybody else's conferences or workshops or whatever you want to call them. And the truth is, I tell people that because our long-term relationship with the people that come to the NAMS workshop, and that we use our low price entry as kind of a filter for getting the right people in, our long-term value is huge. And the money just comes back from the people who come over and over, who buy more of our products, who trust us, and we build this community that it works together. So that is really an important factor in helping people build a community, I think. And this whole community is a joint venture community.
It works. It works if you work it.
Yeah. So tell me about we're talking about this first step. Of creating joint venture relationships, and you've said put your audience in the mindset and put yourself in the audience mindset. Understand what they want. Understand how you can help them. Talk to them about that. Now, one of the things you said I think is really important and really interesting is that when somebody comes to you and says, how can I help you, we blow that off often. If somebody comes to me and says that to me, I have a really difficult time coming up with what I want you to do for me that day and saying it, because I realize that most people are serious. When they come to you and say, how can I help? They're serious. It's getting past that independence piece that you talked about. So I think from both sides of a partnership, it's important to ask how I can help you. And then when they ask you, is to respond back and start creating that back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where the work comes in, because believe it or not, people are a lot harder to help than we would think. You know, we're all a little bit too self-centered, so we think to ourselves, well, all this time I've been getting it wrong, and now that I understand them and getting it right, I'm going to march out there today and develop all these great joint venture relationships. And you think that the whole challenge was just to get you fixed. Well, that's only half the battle, because when you go out to help all your partners, most of them aren't going to be wired to this too, and they're going to look at it and think, like David thought, you can't trust anybody, this person wants something from me, I should be able to do it all myself. So they've got the whole stinking things and sickness that you've got to work through too as well. And, you know, like a child who needs the medicine, sometimes you got to wrap it in some candy or something to be able to make it palatable. So now you're going to have to figure out how to get around your partner's pitfalls of not being able to be helped. So it's a bit of work. But the best thing that you can possibly do after, I mean, I think the first step is just decide, just commit to that this is the way you want to be. And I think if you see the benefit of it, you don't have to commit, you know, on purpose. I think it will just naturally happen because you see it's in your interest. And then start to become an expert. Start to realize that, you know, you do have an ability to make an impact, and start talking to people about their business. It's not the kind of thing where you just flip on the switch and say, well, I'm doing JVs now. Check that checkbox. It's more like a mindset that evolves over time, and it's the strategy and the tactics come out of it. And I can't always tell you exactly what thing to do, although I can give you a ton of starters, and we'll cover those before we're done. But ultimately, a true JV partner is just wired that way. They're tuned in. They understand. When I'm talking to people, I already am thinking, okay, David Perdue at NAMS, and he's got this happening, and moving here, and maybe this person. So I'm always sort of representing in my mind. I'm a representative of all of my partners' enterprises, all of my partners' projects. And, you know, they say dig the well before you're thirsty, you know? So you're going to have to be able to dig this well. You're going to have to be able to be ready to help beforehand. So it's not going to be presented to you. You know, the next starter problem that comes up is people say, okay, well, Sterling, you told me to ask everybody. I went out and I asked 10 people, what do they need? And they said nothing, or they didn't know. So now what do I do? Okay, well, it's not game over, right? You have to now work on, can you send them a clipping from their industry once a month? Can you put it on your calendar to call them and introduce them to somebody? Can you ask them what their problem is? Can you just take them out to lunch? You have to tune yourself. Tune, T-U-N-E, tune in, tune yourself, align yourself like you tune a musical instrument. It has to be in key. It has to be in harmony with them. Tune yourself in. And there are a lot of tactical approaches you can do. Now, this is just to be helpful in general. There's a whole other level of actually purposefully created JV, actually projects and partnerships and opportunities. And if it's okay with you, David, we can kind of move into some of more of the grander ones.
Please.
Okay. So, for example, you want to do your own ebook, let's say. You want to have an ebook, or you want to have a book in general. Your choices are write it yourself or don't get it done, you think, at least. But the truth is, there's write it yourself, don't get it done, or interview somebody. So what is David Perdue doing? Is he spending this time for these insider sessions, prepping the night before? Now I got to teach everybody about JVs. Can't talk now, honey. Can't stop for dinner. I got a lot of work to do tonight to learn JV to teach it tomorrow. He's just pulling in the experts, right? He's leveraging. And that's great. That's the smart way. So he's interviewing and he's pulling in the information. He's getting it done instead of having to necessarily do it himself. So perfect thing you can do is interview somebody. And then the next questions are, well, why would somebody want to talk to me, and how do I approach them and all that stuff? But getting together with other people and practicing, I still say masterminding is the best way to go, but I just want to really quickly touch on some of these other things before we get into masterminding because they're so important. You can interview somebody. You can put yourself out there on a forum or a discussion board and say, I'm good at XYZ, looking to trade for ABC. You know, whether it's Craigslist or some forum in your community, or put an ad out or a classified or a blast to your email list of whatever group you belong to. You just start putting yourself out there with what you have to offer and saying, hey, I'm looking for this, I have that. It's a simple Craigslist kind of thing, you know. A guy with a truck looking to trade for a boat happens every day. And we do it with things big as trucks or boats, but we don't do it with things as big as our lives and our businesses, you know. So if you're good at HTML, put that out there. Start dropping, put it in your signature file. Good at HTML, really need help with graphics. Want to do a trade? Private message me, you know, something like that. So you can ask to interview somebody. You can ask to trade services with somebody. You can even create a project with somebody. You might even team up with two or three or four people to say, what is an outcome I'd really like to have? What is something I'd really like to do? And this works very well around information products, but it also works very well in any business. If you're a dentist, you know a chiropractor, you might say, hey, listen, you know, people who come in to get their teeth cleaned also have bad backs sometimes, and I know some of the people who have backs that you see also have teeth. So maybe we can, you know, put each other's business card in there, in each other's thing or something. Or maybe I can put a link to you to your site on my site and my site on your site. We can maybe even go speak together somewhere. So maybe you see how there's this whole world that opens up when you partner and trade and involve yourself. But the most important thing is to start the conversation. Take your chiropractor friend out to lunch and say, you know, I got this crazy idea. Call me crazy, but I'm thinking maybe, you know, I could refer you some business and you could refer me some business. I was in a great organization called BNI, Business Networking International. I highly recommend BNI if you're a service professional. They have a group in every, not in every city, but they try to have a group in as many cities as they can. They invite one particular specialty. So one doctor, one lawyer, one plumber, you know, one accountant. And that's it for that group. And then they refer each other business. So all week long, the accountant knows that he's got a lawyer and a plumber and everybody else in his group. And he just listens. And if he hears somebody who, you know, needs those services, he shows our little card, hands it to them, and says, hey, you know, earlier this week I ran into a lady in the checkout line and she really needed a plumber, so I recommended you. Meanwhile, the plumber comes back to the table and says, you know, Mr. Chiropractor, my uncle has bad back and I've recommended you. So they're passing, you know, the referrals around. It's fantastic. It's the best way to work, because now in an hour of listening to how you can help your partners, you can get more referrals that week than if you spent 40 hours actually looking for your own referral. Remember we talked about dividing the effort while multiplying the effects? Huge, huge. And if you have a BNI group in your local area and you already have your specialty, if you're an accountant and there's already an accountant, start a new one. Go to BNI.com or whatever it is. Ivan Meisner is the head of the organization. I had a pleasure to meet him, great guy. And say, look, I want to start a new chapter in the next count or whatever. I started my own chapter years ago, and it was great. And I made many, you know, great relationships and got referrals out of it. But you would never do that if you weren't tuned. And if you were tuned but you never took action, you would never do that. So you don't even need to be in BNI to do that, by the way. You can just say, hey, David, I know so-and-so. He might make a great speaker for your organization. What do you think? And he says, oh, great, introduce me. Good. So I've just done a referral kind of thing without, you don't have to get permission. You don't have to have a system or a structure to do it in. That's another great way to do it. How are we doing so far on that idea, David?
Pretty good, I think. You know, one of the things you just said reminded me that the way I get instructors at NAMS is that instructors refer instructors. Mm-hmm. And I do it for a couple of reasons. One is because the instructors already know what kind of instructors we want. And they are the kind of people that we want. So they're going to refer people that they trust and know and like into our instructor crew. And the second reason is because with the recommendation of one of our instructors, the instructor has kind of a almost a sponsoring kind of role. You know, they bring the person in, they show them what the ropes are, they tell them what the expectations are, and the instructor also knows that he has a little skin in the game. His reputation will suffer if that person doesn't deliver. So they're helping me, and we're growing that that group of referrals that way. So that's great.
I want to just get back for a second to some of the results that you can expect, because this, you know, 90 minutes in, sometimes our eyes glaze over a little bit and we forget where we're headed. In 2006, in February, I announced that I would make $100,000 in 90 days, starting with no partner, no products, no list.
Right.
The legendary Ken McCarthy from JV Alert Live was my mentor, and within 92 days, we did over $100,000. What a lot of people don't realize, I mean, already 100 grand in the 7-day sales process out of a 90-day build cycle. It's pretty interesting, pretty amazing. I think a lot of folks would like those results. But what a lot of people don't realize is that not once but twice during my pre-launch, before the product was released, during two different 24-hour periods, we got more traffic in that 24-hour period to my pre-launch website than the White House's website. More traffic in 24 hours than whitehouse.gov.
Wow.
And how does that happen? Because I'm a genius? Because I'm Superman? No. Because I partnered with enough partners that we all did the heavy lifting, we all pushed together. I could never, never, never do that on my own. But with us, you know, what I can't do alone, we can do together. And look at all the different phrases that come up. We all do better when we put our heads together. There's strength in numbers. United we stand, divided we fall. I mean, it never ends. There's a million of them because it's true, right? We do better. You know, when the tide comes in, it raises all the ships. And this is vital to understand that you're going to get into mutually beneficial relationships, that people will do what's in their selfish best interest that benefits everybody. And you can do things like that. You can. Would you like more traffic in the 24-hour period in the White House? It was great. You know, it gave me a boost that I needed, and it separated me from the pack, and it got me over the wall. these are the kind of results you can expect. $100,000 in 90 days is nothing compared to what some of these businesses are doing. So when you see a little toy from the latest movie inserted into your Happy Meal at McDonald's, movie company, toy company, McDonald's, how many millions of dollars do you think is being exchanged in that little joint venture right there? A lot.
Yeah, so the thing I like about joint, to me, joint ventures is the fastest way to build your business. People don't understand that, I think, because they think it is a slow process on an individual basis. But I did a slideshow one time, a single slide that showed how all of the relationships at the workshop built on each other, and they started with one or two people. And within, you know, 2 years, we had the entire screen filled with a ton of people that were working together. So in my mind, it's a, do you agree that it's the fastest way to build a business?
It's, to me, it's a requirement. I would never do anything now without people. I'll tell you a quick story. I might have mentioned this to you before. I read somewhere that there was this super jet that they were building. The military was building this great fighter plane. It was supposed to be the next great thing, and whatever, billions of dollars got put in there. Big day comes, all the high-end super generals are standing around ready for the demo of this plane, and the fighter pilot walks across the tarmac, gets into the plane, closes the lid, fires up the engine. He's sitting there, everybody's waiting for him to take off. Sit there a minute longer. He cuts the engine, he lifts the lid up, and gets back down off the ladder, and he's walking away. And one of the generals says, "Where are you going? What's wrong? We're supposed to fly this plane. It's a big test flight." And he says, "Whoever designed this cockpit, where the stick is, I can't move the stick the right way. It's banging into my leg. I can't. This plane can't fly. What's wrong?" So next time you guys are designing a multi-billion dollar fighter plane, you might benefit from considering inviting the guy who has to fly it to the design table. Just an idea. And there you go.
So what you're saying is get people involved early.
As early as possible, design your projects with your partners, not only in mind, but at the design table, right? So if I'm going to design any kind of project, any kind of, you know, I don't mean a project like a new, necessarily only a new content piece or a new website or something. I mean just getting up in the morning and designing a traffic campaign or anything. I want you guys to benefit from it. I would rather have we working on it than me working on it. So let's all get together. David, I'm going to do this. If I'm doing the celebrity traffic summits, if I'm doing marketer talk, if I'm doing any of these, you know, these projects, what would you do? This is the kind of feedback that I request, because we already went over what you ask, how you can help the other person. But when you're trying to get your own help, how do you help yourself by asking for help from them? Here's some of the things I would suggest that you say. If you were a shareholder in what I'm doing, if you own part of this, if you were going to make money, whether it succeeded or not make money if it failed, what would you do? Here's what I'm planning. I'm planning to do these video webinar hangout calls, and then package the recordings and sell them or whatever. And I'd like you to be a part of it. I'd like to give you an affiliate link. But before I go through all this trouble, David, what would you do if you were in my shoes? Have you done this before? Do you know anybody who's done it before? What would benefit you? Would you promote it like that? Would a affiliate link help you? What would really help you if I did that? And David might give me an answer similar to, like, well, that would help me a little bit, sir, but what would really help me is if you could put my affiliate link into your members area. And I'd say, oh, I never thought of that. Wonderful. Okay, thanks. So I'll design that feature in there. And when you get enough people at the table, you're going to get the best ideas, right? And then when you get the best ideas, you're going to beat the heck out of your competition. You know, it was King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table. Not King Arthur. It is kitchen table in his underwear at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? He had his advisors, right? When you see Trump on The Apprentice, he's flanked by two people on the left side and the right side. And what does he say? He says, so-and-so, what do you think? And he leans over the other way. You remember seeing the show, right? He literally leans out of his chair, right? Over towards it. He's halfway out of his chair. Hey, what do you think, George? And George tells him. He says, you know, George is right. I trust George's opinion. He's surrounded by great advisors. What possible hope or chance do you have if the competition is teaming up like this? Do you think you could make it for 1 minute in this world by yourself if the competition is teaming up like this? Look at how the jungle works. A cheetah hunts by himself, but a lion hunts in a pack. and in a pride of lions, in a group of lions. So the cheetah has to be the fastest animal on earth. Literally has to work harder at running faster than any other creature on two or four legs. The cheetah has to run faster than anybody else. Why? Because he's doing it all himself. Hello? That's a lot of work. You ever see lions hunt? You know what they do? They're kind of lazy. They hang their heads. One walks over here and says, hey, you go over there. Cut them off on the other side. I'm going to stand over here for a while, right? And the other lion's laying under the tree, sunning his belly, you know? Yeah, I'll come over here in a minute, guys. You get started, right? The lions are lazy hunters. I mean, when they have to run, they run. But most of the time, you know what they do? They triangulate. You go left. You go right. I'll stand here, and we'll corner this guy. And that's it. It's over. Because no matter which way the animal runs, one of the lions has got to go. It's done. Game over. Not a lot of work. And what's funny is if you ever watch the Discovery Channel and you find one of the lions who's somehow been separated from the pack by accident, and he tries to start hunting, it's a joke. It's funny. It's disastrous. He's barely, you know, compared to, because he's so spoiled by having all his buddies around.
Well, they practically starve.
Yeah, they practically starve on their own. Now, I don't want you to be like that. I want you to be enough of a cheetah that you can take care of yourself. But really, truly, why do all that work? You know, that poor cheetah, he takes off after he hits like 55 miles an hour, and if he misses that thing, he's done for like an hour. He's got to reset. You know, he's got to get a drink and rest, and just, because it takes a lot of energy. Why would you want to work like that when there are people around you who already know HTML, already have graphics? I mean, all this stuff, it's all been done. It's already ready to go. It is literally a phone call or an email away. What are you doing running your butt off like that, sweating in the hot sun in the jungle? Why? For what reason? Are you the only animal out there on the internet? Are you the only chiropractor in business around the world? Come on. You know, I know guys that are used to be a chiropractor or used to be a dentist. They did so well with their internet marketing piece that they switched, that they made so much money from being a chiropractor who's got a great website and does good lead generation and all that stuff, that their other chiropractor buddies say, hey, man, how did you get that Ferrari? What are you doing that I'm not doing it, right? You know where I'm going with this, David, right? So then the guys say, can you teach me when you're not doing your chiropractic? Can you teach me how to build a chiropractic business like you did? And he says, maybe there's a good little business here for me. And he becomes the chiropractor marketing guru. And you get to leverage, when you take his course or same speak or whatever, go to seminar, you leverage all of his brochures and all of his website designs and his free report on, because he already did it. Or you could try to do it all yourself. Or you could even do worse than that and wait till you figure out that these things are good things to do and then try to write them all and build them all yourself. I mean, you know, if you're an immortal, God bless you, knock yourself out. Meanwhile, if you're a human like us and time is limited, come on, get with the program. You deserve the best, most maximum firepower you can get in a minimum amount of time. And if you had a, God forbid, if you had a sick kid, would you start to go to medical school? Really? Or would you just say, give me the best minds, the best medicine, the best hospital. You put everything together. You would be the greatest general contractor putting together the best team. Because anything for my kid, right? Well, guess what? You do have a sick kid. You have your business. And 9 out of 10 small businesses fail, Small Business Administration in America said. So your business is sicker than your kid. So what are you doing about it? Get help.
Okay, so we need to get specific here about timelines and what we would do if we were going to build a JV plan, because that's what we're going to do this afternoon with folks, is we're going to help them build a JV plan, how to really attack the market. They're going to get their mindset right. They're going to understand the service aspect of joint ventures, and then we're going to give them some kind of a blueprint, a step-by-step of a plan that would get them moving down the path. And actually, Stan here said, would you at some point talk about realistic timelines, what to expect in working with JVs? And that is where we're headed with all of this. But it, as Sterling was saying, it is so important to understand that this is team. This is a team thing. And the truth is, we all have ulterior motives, and we get to the spot where we're going to build a business, and a business has to make us money. And that's always in the back of our mind. But from a joint venture relationship standpoint, we are out there building a team that we can leverage at some point naturally. And that's what we're talking about. So let's talk about timeline and anything else here that we can do to get more, get a kind of an itinerary for this afternoon.
Absolutely. Let's get into some action steps. Great idea. So there's two things I want everybody to do. First is the same thing, and then the other thing is going to be custom depending on where you're at.
Okay, you're going to have to speak it up just a little bit.
I'm sorry, it must be something with the connection because I'm pretty much on top of the mic, but I'll try to speak a little bit louder. Is that better?
That's better, yeah.
Okay, great. Sorry about that, folks. First thing I want everybody to do is form a mastermind group as soon as possible. You can get a free conference line at any place on the internet that does those kind of things. So you can go to a search engine and type in free conference line. Or my suggestion is you download Skype, S-K-Y-P-E. It's a free conferencing software. You can set up a little chat room for your friends. But a mastermind group works like this. Get at least three other people. Set one appointment every week at the same time. Pick a time on the clock. And get together at least four, no more than six. Every week, we rotate the moderator. So you're the moderator the first week, the next person is the moderator the next week. And you get together and do the following. If it's four people, you get together for an hour. You each get 15 minutes, and you talk about what's working, what's not working, and what's next, and what you need help with. What's working, what's not, what's next, and where you need help, specifically where you need help. You spend 5 minutes talking about it, answering those questions, and then you spend 10 minutes getting feedback from the group. I don't care if these people are in your industry, not in your industry, as long as they're business people. Or even if they're, you know, if you're in a band and you want, you know, get other band guys or other managers, it doesn't matter. Whatever area you're in, get people, at least three other people. It's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, that's when you meet. First person goes, okay, I'm the moderator, I'm the timekeeper, I have a timer, I have a little digital timer. I set it for 5 minutes and 15 minutes. So 5 minutes goes. You go first. David talks. He talks about what's working in the business, what's not working, what's next for him, and what he specifically needs feedback from. And then he shuts up, and that's the most important thing. You have to shut up. Don't take 15 minutes to talk because you get no feedback, and what's the point? Okay? So 5 minutes of talk, then it's enough to turn it over to the group as specifically as you can. So I guess what I need help with is this, or what I'm wondering is should I do this or that, or I don't even know what I need help with, but that's the next thing I have to figure out. What should I be asking about? What's the question I should be asking? Whatever it is, shut up and listen, let them talk for 10 minutes, then the timekeeper says, okay, time, we move to the next person. Then Fred goes for 5 minutes, talks, answers those questions, what's working, what's not, what's next, what you need, and you go around and around. You meet every week like that. That's the best JV practice I can possibly give you, and it's great because it's non-project specific, it's constant instead of time-based, like a project starts and then it stops. I know guys have been in mastermind partnerships for years. And the year before I did JV Formula, the year before I did $100,000 in 90 days, I was in three different mastermind groups, Monday group, Wednesday group, and Friday group. I started them all, and I specifically started them with people who were making more than me, were more connected than me, more experienced than me. I always wanted to be the lowest guy on the totem pole because I'm going to learn the most to get the most benefit. And if you say, why would people want to do it? Some will, some won't, so what, who's next? Keep trying. Hustle. It's called vitamin H. Hustle. Because all you need to find is three yeses. I don't care if it takes you 1,000 no's to get the three yeses. Stop complaining about it and go out and do it. Because in the time it takes to complain about it or have a negative thought, you could be asking the next person. You can't afford the luxury of a negative thought. You got to get out there. You have people to help, things to do. You have community to serve. So make sure you start a mastermind group as soon as possible. I challenge you to have a mastermind group started within the next 24 hours. If you can start one before the end of the day, all the better. And it's not that difficult. You can even start a temporary mastermind group and swap people out later. Even have a small, short one if people don't want to make a commitment to a long term. Say, I want to meet four times for this month, once a week, and then be done. Whatever you need to do. But you got to be in that zone. Here's what's going to happen. You're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. You're either going to be on the phone with some other people, talking about your businesses, interrelating with each other, or you're not. And if you're not, if you can't do that, you're never going to be able to step up to the bigger thing that it takes, like let's do a project for $100,000 or $1 million or $1 billion. You'll never do that. If you can't do the baby steps kiddie pool version, you're not going to do the big version. But it's safe because you can ask your friends. These are not people you have to be embarrassed about, you know, about. Just ask them. So that's the first big step I would say is start a mastermind group. Dave, do you have any feedback on that before we move to the second thing?
I do. This 10 minutes of feedback here is so important because I'm in mastermind group now. I've been in mastermind groups for years and years and years. I can't live without them. And the thing about this 10 minutes of feedback from the group is it almost always starts with, when they're giving you feedback, it almost always starts with, I know a guy who. Because They may not have the solution to your problem, but they probably know somebody who has a solution to your problem, and it is the entree to a wider audience, a wider circle of influence, a wider group of JVs. That's where I've built some of my biggest relationships.
Mm-hmm. That's David Perdue from NAMS for you, ladies and gentlemen. You need to hire a stamp of approval? Come on. If David's doing it, you should be doing it. And, you know, you're going to find some of your results, you're going to find that not only do you get hooked up with people faster, sometimes you're going to be dissuaded from doing something. You're going to be talked out of something that is not a good idea for you. That's a wonderful thing to have happen. Now it's all that wasted time, energy, and effort that you don't have to make to find out it wasn't the right thing to do, because your partners can see what you can't see. Yes?
That's all right. I was just going to say, the other thing that I would really suggest is this whole thing about making sure you are in a group with people who are more experienced and making more money and doing all of that, is that you got to ask. That's all you got to do is ask.
Yeah, you got to give people the opportunity to say yes.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, that right there is a service. Somebody says, well, why would they want to join the mastermind group with me? Come on. Well, here's the reason, because they don't have one and you're the one forming it. So you're the starter, and that's the service that you're providing. I mean, really, just if you get this, nobody's going to have to encourage you. You're going to say, got it. Guys, David Sterling, I got it. I'm on it. I'm out. I'm doing this. Let's go. You already probably hung up the phone by now, which is a good thing, because you're already hustling and doing it. You're texting somebody as we speak. That's what it looks like. You have a fire under you, you know, under you. So one other thing besides getting persuaded to not do certain things is to get reminded of what you do wrong. And the single biggest problem that we all share, I think, is lack of self-awareness, lack of self-monitoring, lack of ability to see ourselves as other people see us. Listen, people already know what you're doing wrong. You're going to be the last one to the party. So if you start doing something, the thing that you usually do, like whatever the thing you usually do is, maybe it's you know, saying you're going to call somebody and do some things, but then never getting around to it, or you know, changing your idea from week to week, or not believing in yourself, or whatever it is, you're already outed to the people who know you. And that's okay. But you need that, because the bad news is the good news. So be prepared to be shown yourself. The mirror is going to show you what you really are. So, for example, I kind of overcommit to projects. I'm a too many projects kind of guy. And I learned that from being in my mastermind group. I'd say, guys, listen, I'm so excited. I got this thing this week, and it's going to be great. I'm going to do this. And then my mastermind partners would gently remind me, you know, you already are doing two projects. And last week you talked about a third one, and you said you were not going to do it. Now this week you're talking about a different one. You might benefit from just remembering, you know, don't go off in too many directions. And I go, wow, that's right. Thanks, guys. I didn't remember that. Because you get too stuck in the moment. And then somebody else in the group keeps saying that they were going to get around to doing something. They never seem to get to do it, and they're too busy or whatever. And the mastermind group says, you know, maybe you need to take a look at it, that you're not serious, or this isn't the right fit for you, or maybe you're approaching it the wrong way. These are the things that you cannot do on your own. You cannot do your own brain surgery. I mean, I guess you could. It's not preferable. It's probably a little sloppy. You're not going to get the best result, but these are the things we rely on for other people. You know, you need that kind of feedback. The bad news is the good news. So get feedback and start a mastermind group with people that you know, like, and trust, that will steer you the right way. And make sure you tell them what's in it for them. I think that's all I have to say on mastermind. David?
Okay. That's great. I think that really covers that well. It's an essential tool for anybody. Okay, so you've got mastermind group, you've got people that are on your list, you're building a list all the time that of people that you want to partner with, that you want to, we all have, I target people. I go to events looking for people that I want to meet there. And it's not so much that I want to meet and tackle them to be involved in what I'm being involved in, it's just I want to meet them and build a relationship and start communicating. So I think going to events is a really important aspect of identifying JV partners that you can work with. And I believe targeting those people is it's not a great word, but it is exactly what you want to do, is know what you want when you go to an event, who you want to meet, and what kind of relationship you want to have when you come out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I've even gone to events, by the way, and to meet somebody who I thought would be a good instructor at NAMS and walked away and thought, nope, that's not going to work. So you get positive and you get negative, and you got to pay attention to both.
True.
So what else would you suggest on, once you've got your list of people that you're trying to identify and trying to work with, what else do you suggest is the next step for folks to do? And And let's say I've got a launch that I'm going to have 6 months out. I've got a book that I'm writing a book, and at the end of that period, I'm going to have this book that I'm going to launch, and I want to get all these people on board. I want to get the right end notes for my books, those kind of things. What's next?
Okay, well, the first project out of the two that I'm assigning this homework is to start a mastermind group. That's more operating system than anything else. You need to have
right.
that always anyway. The second project is to determine the second project. I know that sounds funny, but the first question is, what is the question? You have to get the right things right. And everybody has a single highest return on investment activity, a single highest return on investment project, the single best, most pivotal task, the thing that will launch you into the stratosphere more than anything else. But you probably don't know what it is, and you're probably not working on it. So maybe you're doing a book launch, but maybe it's not the right thing for you to do. I remember doing, and maybe it is, but I remember being on the hot seat panel many times at JV Alert, where a person would come up for 5 minutes, talk about what they're working on, present the panel with the problem that they're facing. So I'm showing you my website. I need to know whether I need to do this or that. What do you think, panel? And then the panel goes on and talks and talks and talks, and I usually get the mic last, and finally at the end I say, I think my best feedback is maybe you should consider whether this is even the right project for you. Why are you doing this project? How does it fit in with your goals? You know, what's the big picture? Where are you headed? Is the house that you're building a house that you actually want to live in? And many times the person, you know, afterwards has said to me, you know, you asked me the right thing. I was on the wrong thing. And the worst thing that could have happened to me is I would have got advice on how to do that thing because it was the wrong thing. So you have to get the right things right, and I would encourage you to write that down and literally post it somewhere. Get the right things right. Don't waste time getting the wrong things right, and don't waste time even more getting the wrong things wrong and studying really hard to be able to finally get the wrong things right because you feel like that's an improvement. Did that make sense?
Yeah, it did.
Okay, so if you're out there getting the wrong things wrong, but one of these days I'm going to get really good at it, and now look what I did. I got the wrong thing right. Because everybody will say, wow, that, you know, that's beautiful, fantastic job. Totally wrong thing to get right, by the way. But, I mean, you know, good work. You want to get the right things right. You may not even know what the right things are to get right. And your advisory panel, your mastermind group, is a great way to validate exactly what David said, that this is the right thing. So the second project is, what is the second project? Where are you suffering in your business? Is it traffic? Is it monetization? Is it product line? Is it that you're in the wrong business? And you need to close this catering business down already and, you know, do something else. Like, what is the real highest return on investment activity? Because the problem with projects is we just get involved in all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs said your time is limited, you know? And a couple years later, after he delivered his great speech at the Stanford commencement address, which I highly recommend everybody watches that, Steve Jobs at the Stanford commencement address, he talks about how time is limited, and a few years later, he was dead from cancer. So his time was limited. All of our times are limited. So
right.
You don't have the luxury to just goof off and just invent stuff. You have to figure out what the best use of your resources, as David is typing on the screen, and choose that highest return activity. In the book, Getting Things Done by David Allen, he talks about the next right action. Most of the time, people don't do, they're not very productive. They don't have good productivity and good results because they're not taking the next right action. So you can have next actions all day long, but are they the right actions on the right project? So now that you have a mastermind group, take a look at your business, drag that thing out, pull it apart, arrange it on the table, turn it around like a Rubik's Cube man, look at it from all directions and say, what should I be working on? Should I be working on creating more products? Oh, maybe I have too many products already and it's the traffic I need. Or, you know, should I be trying to, you know, be more productive? No, maybe I need to be hiring people because I'm working 80 hours a week and being more productive is the exact wrong thing to be. You know, you really have to get the right. Getting the right thing right is the single next thing you need to do. And even David Allen in his book says, determining the work is the work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Deciding on what to do next, hey, buddy, that's the work. So you're not saying, I have to decide what I can do to start this work. Deciding what to do is starting the work. That's the work. And, you know, measure twice, cut once. You know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. All these things, they say that a rocket ship on the launching pad, if you take the tip of the rocket ship, that needle point at the top, and just move it 1 millimeter, that's the difference between going to Jupiter and Saturn when that goes far along, right? So you have to make sure you measure correctly, because the worst thing you're going to want to do is work really hard and find out when you finally get there, that was the wrong thing to do in the first place. So if you can determine what the next most pivotal task for you is, what's the highest return on investment, what's the highest outcome, most valuable outcome that you could have, whether it's doubling your business or getting different people to work on your business or getting a different business or getting out of business and, you know, writing that book you've always wanted to do, whatever it is, that is the single best thing. So then you've got the best people on the job and you've got the best job to work on. Now, you're actually in the zone. Now, only from that moment on, you're actually doing something.
So yesterday I met with my coach and we went through all of the tasks that I had to do over the next 2 weeks. And then we split those tasks into things that were my activities, because there were things I should and could do and was good at doing. And they were also the right pay grade. And then there was the task that I needed to dole out to people that were not in my sweet spot and that were in my not in my pay grade, things I shouldn't be doing to begin with. So what we did was basically exactly what you're talking about here, is making sure that I'm working on the things I need to be working on and working with other people to get other things done. Now, when it comes to, I've got a launch coming next Tuesday. I'm working on today putting together all of the joint venture material that I need for those people that I want to get involved in this, and I got to get that to them. And I've been working on these relationships to do this over the next, well, for the last 5 years. And that's the other thing, is this is an ongoing thing that doesn't, it just doesn't go from launch to launch. It's a way of life. So
I'll give extra credit bonus homework if it's okay, if I got 30 seconds.
You bet.
Contact David Perdue and say, what can I do for you?
I have some things on my task list.
You know, I was interviewing Mark Victor Hansen for the JV Formula Project. I was fortunate enough to get a few minutes of his time, and I was interviewing him, asking him his questions, videotaping him, and when he was done, he said, listen, I appreciate the interview, thanks very much. I got to run. I got a meeting with Bono, and I think Queen, somebody from some country, because we're trying to put together a fundraiser, and I got to go. And I realized at that moment, this is best-selling author Mark Victor Hansen, you know, guy's a millionaire, touched the lives of millions of people. But he's hustling just like everybody else. He's got a project and a to-do list like everybody else, and he's got things he's working on that he's got to figure out answers to questions and solutions. This guy doesn't, you know, walk on air. He's the same as us. He's just doing it at a bigger level, but he's still got problems that need solutions, and, you know, he still would appreciate somebody saying, hey, how can I help you with that? Because guess what? The guy needs help like all the rest of us. We're all doing it. We're all the same, you see?
That's right. So, Sterling, you know, I just want to say this has been an incredible information-packed morning. I mean, 2 hours of a lot of great background information, as well as some important stuff that we never talk about, and you've gone through all of it. Now, I want you to tell people how to get in touch with you.
You can reach me at sterlingvalentine.com, sterlingvalentine.com, and I'm pretty much hard to miss on the internet, so I'm here to help you. Let me know how I may serve you. I look forward to connecting with you and being a small part of your continuing success story.
Sterling, thank you so much again. Is there anything, last words you want to give us before we break for our 2 hours and come back this afternoon with our pencil to the tactics?
Absolutely. I thank you for the opportunity in advance, David. It's been great, and I'm happy to serve. Anytime you need me to serve the NAMS community, I'm all ears. I'm ready to go. I'm a soldier for life, because this is a great thing that you're doing. You're changing the world. So that being said, my piece of advice would be, consider, ladies and gentlemen, that everything you have achieved so far in your life, you've probably done it at such an individualistic level, such an independent level, that you really don't know what you're capable of. So I don't want you to measure your previous success or your previous failure, if you want to call it that, as the measure of what you can do. Because we humans are communal animals. You know, you need community, you need other people. And in business especially, we seem to just isolate ourselves. I don't know why, it's just part of our wiring. So take a look at everything you've done so far. It's just a prelude to what you're really capable of. You've just shown the world and yourself what you can do by the power of your own steam. What you do not see yet, what the world hasn't seen yet, is what you're really capable of. When you step up to the plate, swing the bat, and you've got a whole team behind you. That, my friend, is really going to blow your mind, because you have no idea what's possible for you, what you're capable of, and you may be able to actually literally change the world. But you've got to give yourself as much support as possible. You deserve it. The world deserves it. You owe it to the community that you serve. You have a duty and an obligation to those who you've decided to serve, to make sure that you give them the maximum chance to get your best. And that means you're going to have to team up with other people. It's the only way. It's the final way. Interdependent. And when you do that, you're going to be amazed at the results. I promise you.
Okay, that's great words. Thank you again. And Sterling, I'll be talking to you soon and looking forward to connecting with you on the Celebrity Traffic Summit again. Thank you.
Looking forward to it too. Get out there, guys, and do good stuff.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.